Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here again with you on KLBB, Where Your Music and Memories Live. Is that right, Tom? We call it Where Your Music and Memories...
Yep, you got it right.
I got it.
Where Your Music and Memories Live.
Well, speaking of music and memories, our next guest here, our first guest of the day, Paul Stagg. Now, you may not know the name if you're in the metro area, but you do know the name if you're in Wilmer or if you've been in Duluth or Princeton. Paul, welcome to Flashback Twin Cities.
Thank you very much. How are you guys doing?
We are doing great. It's a great day to be in Minnesota. It's we talk a lot about the weather, so we're trying to really just enjoy the last few weeks of summer here.
Yeah, isn't that that sad that it's gone this quickly?
Now, I want to point out, I said you may not know the name, but the voice, if you've ever watched that channel, what was it called, WCCO-TV, you may remember this voice announcing
that channel.
Yeah, I think it's still on the air.
Yes, I believe so.
In fact, why don't we just start off, let's start off with a clip, Tom, if you want to play that intro here.
WCCO Television, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
From WCCO Television, the Northwest's leading news station, this is the 10 p.m. report.
I'm driven. Let's watch it.
Yeah, please. Yeah, that takes me back a few years.
That narration was on a few years there, Paul.
Yeah, you know, I did their voiceover work for Channel 4 from about 1977 or 78 until about 1990. And so there was a few years in there.
Now, were you one of those announcers that was in the booth during the day, or did you do a whole bunch of them and then come back after a few days?
Yeah, that's what we would do. We would. I was at CCO FM, which turned into W Light at that time as well, just down the block. And so I would walk over there whenever they'd need me. They'd just call, and I'd come on over and record a few things for them and then do it again when they wanted me. So it was a pretty easy deal.
Well, it must need you quite a bit, because we have quite a bit of video on tcmedianow.com, which you're narrating, and now we can actually identify that name with the voice for the audience here. Paul, talk to me a little bit about your early days in radio. You were 15 when you started announcing at KWLM.
Yep, that's right. I was one of those lucky kids that fell into it. How it happened was my family lived about five blocks from the radio station. My English teacher in ninth grade was a part-time announcer at the station. He would work Sunday nights, and so I would pedal my bike out there to see what he was doing. And finally, after doing this for a few weeks, he said, well, why don't you go play the records and talk between them? And of course, this is like 10 o'clock at night. So I began to do that. And the owner heard me, Bill Linder, and he called me and said, hey, you want to be a part-timer? And I said, well, of course. You know, I can't drive yet, but I'll be your part-timer. So that's how it started for me. I was lucky.
No, I wouldn't ask this in 2013, but I'll ask it in when you started. What was the going rate for a part-timer when you were in your teenage years?
35 cents. 35 cents an hour.
Oh, that's hurtful.
That's almost what me and Tom are making.
I went, you guys, yeah. Of course, you got to remember, like gas was like 25 cents a gallon back then. But what happened was I had worked there part-time through high school. Then I went to college for 15 minutes, and then I went back because I knew what I wanted to do, and college wasn't offering it back then. And when I got back, they paid me 50 cents an hour. And I thought I was king of the road.
How can it get any better than this, right?
Yeah, that was it. I had it made.
Now, Tom and I have both been 15 at one point, and we know that the voice is not that that smooth delivery that it is in that age from about 13 to about 16. Now, was your voice...
That's an understatement.
Had your voice come what it is today at that point, or did it evolve?
No, I have tapes from back then, and... it didn't have the depth and the range that it eventually turned into. What happened was I sounded good enough to do that kind of work, and I moved from Wilmer to Fargo in 1963 to WDAY up there, And one of the copywriters, and they had copywriters back then at the radio station. In fact, there was four of them. He was a chanter at the Catholic Church up there, and he had been taking voice lessons from a gentleman who lived in Fargo who had made it all the way to the Metropolitan Opera and then lost a wife and child in childbirth and eventually came back to Fargo to take care of his ailing father and just stayed there. And he was doing voice lessons, so I started visiting with him, and all he had me do was exercise my voice muscle by singing certain combinations of songs and then different kinds of lip movements and jaw movements and things of that nature. And the thing about your voice muscle is if you develop it, it'll stay that way. It's not like other muscles in your body that that get limp and limber, or limp rather, if you don't use it. But your voice muscle will stay the same if you work with it. And singing is the best thing to do. Do you guys sing?
Not unprompted.
When I lived in Japan, I karaoke'd every weekend, and it was great.
Yeah, well, that's the way to do it.
Well, anyway, that'll be a show, future show. It'll be the karaoke.
Oh, you just wait till Proud Mary keeps on turning. That's coming.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great, Paul. Because we had Bud Kraling on maybe about a month ago, and Bud's 95, and his voice is about the same, if not better, than it was 30, 40 years ago.
Isn't he something? He is just a peach of a man, just a beautiful man. He was, of course, at CCO TV when I was working with the gang, and you'd meet him in the hallway, and he was just as kind as could be. He was like your old uncle from one of the small towns in Minnesota. He was a great guy.
Well, not to embarrass you, but you know we had some great voiceover talent in this market, including yourself and John Gallos and Bud Kraling, Bill Carlson did announcing. There was a great group of guys that did Ernie Martz, Al Tighe, Channel 9. These are the voices that people remember. And again, I apologize by saying this, that the name might not always be familiar, but the voice is. And
and that's understandable. I wasn't necessarily that much in the big bright spotlight, so to speak, with my radio career, but the voice career did go well.
So you were at radio. You went to WDAY Radio in Fargo, and then what was the journey to the Twin Cities? Did you make it a few smaller towns before you came to CCO Radio?
No, there again, I was fortunate. I, in 1969, got a call from what was then the program director at WWTC, and he said, I've been at home in South Dakota, and I'm looking for an announcer, and I asked my mom who she listens to, and she said, well, why don't you call this kid up in Fargo? He sounds pretty good. So that's how I got the job at WWTC, believe it or not. And I was there until 1973 when CCO-FM expanded to 100,000 watts and went completely on its own away from the AM.
It's experimental FM radio that we tried.
Yeah, yep, that's right.
Who would have thought it would take off, right?
It was what?
Who would have thought FM radio would take off?
Oh, yeah. In fact, the manager at WWTC-AM, when I gave him my resignation and told him where I was going, he said, you're making a big mistake. FM's not going to make it.
It's just a fad.
It's just a fad. Now, granted, we're an AM station here at KLBB 1220, but we coexist with FM frequency, and the movies, radio, TV, it's all somehow found a way to survive, and it's going to survive for the near future, not long-term future. You went to CCO-FM, and CCO-FM was not completely unlike the WLTE format that it was for most of 30 years.
Yeah, when it began, now you've got to understand, too, that the ownership, the corporate mentality was CCO-AM, very adult. Everybody was, pretty laid back, and let's not rock the boat here. And when I went there, I became the program director, and we kept it low-key. We kept it, it was kind of on the edge of what KQRS ended up doing, but we weren't quite that aggressive with it. And we weren't quite as tight as KS95 became when it came on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we ended up with ratings that weren't the best and looking for something else to do, and I eventually became manager there in 1979, and then started looking around for another format. And at that time, there were about a half a dozen stations in major markets that had gone to this light format idea. So we decided we would do that. It was either that or do a KQ kind of thing, because Mark Steinmetz was the manager at KQ when it became so popular. He was a salesman for me at WCCO-FM before we went to light. And then he decided he would go off and manage for ABC over there, which turned out to be a really good move for him.
And you tried Top 40 before you went to Light, correct?
I'm sorry?
You tried Top 40 before you went to Light, correct?
No, well, no, it wasn't that tight. It was still kind of a middle-of-the-road, adult format.
Right.
Yeah, you know, a lot of John Denver and that kind of music.
Yeah, we had Johnny Canton on here a few weeks ago, actually, and he was talking about the tales of coming to CCO FM from his days at DGY and some of the different formats that you went to. But the light format seemed to stick.
It did. It did well. It took a little bit of time to establish it. And finally, people, primarily the female listener, began to like it very much. And so it did do very well. It had a 30-year run before they changed it now to Buzzin'.
Our guest today, Paul Stagg, the current KWLM radio personality and also former manager, program director, and radio personality at WCCO AM and FM. You kind of did a dual role because you were also at CCO AM doing a show at the same time you were working at CCO FM, right?
Well, actually what happened was after we switched to WLite, I was manager at that time, and it had been a few years since I had done any regular air work. And, you know, WLite was a good station, but let's face it, folks, it was a jukebox. And I got real bored with it. So I went over to the AM to my counterpart manager over there, Clayt Kaufman, and said, "Clayt, I want to go back on the radio. Can you help me out?" And he said, "Yeah, come on to work for us." So I went to Jim Rupp, who was corporate president at that time, and I said, "Jim, I'm bored. I want to go over to the AM." He said, "Well, you got to do what you like to do." So that's what I did. And so I ended up being a utility man for the AM, filling in for Steve Cannon when he'd go away on vacation, doing weekend mornings and doing whatever they needed me to do each week. So it wasn't a consistent shift other than Saturday and Sunday mornings.
And you mentioned that CCO AM was a very guarded format. I do laugh at a story that I've heard from Steve Cannon when he was still alive and told the story often, that you weren't allowed to talk about TV at CCO AM.
That's right, yeah.
Johnny Carson didn't exist the next morning.
That's right. You would never talk about television, nor would you talk about your competition. There was one time Tom Bernard was giving me some grief on his show about how I was saying my name Paul on the radio on CCO AM. So I took a couple of shots back at him, and the manager showed up the next day and said, "Paul, we don't do that." So I didn't do that anymore.
This is a clean town. We don't get involved in that kind of
skirmish. Yeah, we're the good neighbor. We don't do that kind of stuff.
Well, you were a good neighbor, and it was a station for a generation. And for better or worse, we have to continue to live in the present day. And you know what radio became. You know, radio changed outside of CCO AM.
It did. It's fun to look back at what that station did accomplish over the years. It was quite phenomenal on Saturday and Sunday mornings, as an example. There were many rating periods when we had 49% of all radios that were turned on to CCO.
No, it's amazing.
That was fabulous numbers, just unbelievable. Of course, you got to remember, as an example, on Sunday mornings, it was a magazine-style format, and there were, besides myself, 18 people who contributed to just the Sunday morning shows. So it was very, very talent-intensive. In fact, there were 110 people working there when I arrived in 1983.
I did CCO AM about a year ago, I did a little guest spot there, and I think there might have been two people working in the building when I was there, and I know that people that have worked there, and this is not a knock on the current state of radio or the current technology that we've afforded ourselves, but it's a much different place than you take someone that worked in a radio station 30 years ago and bring them into one of the corporate-owned stations, and we're a family-owned station here at KLBB, but you bring them corporate-owned station, it's a very different story than it was a decade ago.
Yeah, that's right. It is. It's fun to relive some of it. A lot of people still remember it. Of course, our baby boom bubble of population right now, they all remember it. That's what they grew up with. And I'm part of that bubble, so I was very fortunate to have a chance to work there.
It's what Mom and Dad had on the station wagon. We were in the back seat and couldn't control the dial, so we listened to
exactly.
it. We liked
yes.
it, though. The dong at the top of the hour for the news, it gives that warm feeling.
Yeah, it becomes part of your life, that CBS bong or dong, yeah.
Well, Paul, talk a little bit about post-CCO. You went into station ownership.
Yes. At that time, my wife and I decided after I had left CCO AM, and it was just before CBS bought it, we found a station in Princeton that was a small AM, and it had a permit to go to 50,000 watts with their FM, which at that time was a 3,000 watter. So we were able to find some folks interested in investing with us. We bought it. We went up there. We increased the power on the FM to 50,000 watts. We were there until 1997, and Denny Carpenter made us an offer that we couldn't refuse, so we decided to sell. Also, my wife and I working together, she was sales manager, and I was manager and doing some air work, and we found that we wanted to save our marriage and not necessarily the station, so it's hard to be a husband and wife and work together. That's what we found.
Oh, that's great. And then ended up back where you started out at KWLM.
Yeah, you know what happened? We had sold up there, and then I, for about a year and a half, I did mornings for KLBB when it was under a different ownership and still located in St. Paul there. And then I decided, well, it's time to retire. So my wife, who is a bit younger than me, got a job with the University of Minnesota. She is a development director, and one of her focuses is Morris, Minnesota, the University of Minnesota Morris.
That's
campus.
Where I went to college, so I know
you
that town well.
Well, you know that sweet little school. It's a dynamite little school. And we, for years, have had a lake property by Wilmer. And so we decided, well, if she could do this job, part of it, out of the home, why not build a house out on the lake and I'll just retire? So that's the way we headed. We ended up out here, plans to build, and in the meantime, the Linder family, who still owns the stations here, said, well, if you're going to be around, you got to do something. So they've got me coming in for, I have to be there by 12:30 in the afternoon, and then I get home for dinner about 6:30.
That's rough.
I do newscasts and then one live hour from 5 to 6 p.m. So
and this all started at age 15, and look what's happened. You owned your station. You were on the premier radio station in the country, announcing for Channel 4, and now they just got to find something to do. Got to be on the radio for a while a day.
Yeah, I've just really had a blessed career, and what I'm enjoying most now is working with people such as yourself, young, very aggressive with what they want to do. They love radio, and they know how to use computers, so they're trying to teach me.
Well, we're trying to teach ourselves here, too. We find that the technology changes even faster than some of us that claim to be technical experts.
Isn't it wild? The only thing that's the same from when I started in radio is that there's a microphone on one end and a tower on the other end. Everything in between has changed.
Well, the occasional headphones that don't work, once in a while. That probably hasn't changed.
No, that's true.
So, Paul, ask you a question. I asked other people who've done voice over work extensively as yourself the same question. When you go to a grocery store, you're talking to someone you've just met, do you ever get the look like, do I know you from somewhere? Do I know your voice from somewhere?
That's happened to me. I don't know how many times. And over the years, it's been sometimes very embarrassing, sometimes very, very nice to have people recognize me that much. And here in a smaller town, it happens to me much more than it did in the cities. But it did quite a bit in the cities, too, because I had spent so many years in the market there. And like you had said earlier in the show, even though I was a voice over announcer and didn't really say my name that much, people would recognize the voice and ask, you know, look at me like, who are you? I like to tell the story about the fact that when I arrived at CCO AM, I thought I was on the top of the world, the king of the hill, and was going through a McDonald's drive-in. And, of course, you know how the speakers were at first in those drive-thrus. You really had to speak with distinct sounds so that the person in McDonald's could hear you and understand what you were ordering. And so I was doing that, and the lady said, okay, drive to the window, which I did. And she said, you know, you've got a wonderful, wonderful voice. You should do something with that voice. And I was about to say, well, I am. And she said, you know what you should do? You should be a bingo caller.
Yes. I thought she was going to say be the drive-through announcer speaker, actually.
Yeah.
But the bingo caller is even better.
Yeah, well, that will hopefully bring a little more money. But so I've always said since then that I'm in practice to be a bingo caller.
We have to have goals in life, and I think that what I want to hear a year from now when I call you back to be on the show, I want to hear how that bingo career is going.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that.
About a year from now when I call you back to be on the show a second time, I want you to tell me how that bingo career is going. I think there's some churches out there.
Oh, thank you.
Yes,
I would really like to do that. And I'm still sending out tapes to all the casinos in the area trying to get a job.
You know, that story you mentioned about someone telling you have a good voice, I was wondering if people come up to you and say, can you just tell me that Wheel of Fortune is going to be on at 6:30? Because...
You do go back away.
it's a soothing comfort of home to have you tell me what's on TV next.
That's coming up next, yeah, and what the weekend special programming is going to be, right?
Exactly.
You did a lot of listening to CCO. You know, you obviously have one of those ears that are you a musician?
No, I can't claim any talent of any sort besides watching a lot of TV, which is why I do this show here.
I will back that up.
Yeah, see, there you go. Look at
you
this.
Will.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I ask is that I have found over the years that the people who recognize your voice most are musicians.
Now, that is that's a great thing.
Yeah,
well,
I mean,
it's
fascinating. Also, I have found over the years that some of the best board ops or producers in the studio are musicians or had been musicians
or karaoke experts.
Hey, Tom's an aspiring karaoke star. We occasionally have the fake Elvis sing here, and that might be Tom's role in a few years here. He's working up for that.
The dream lives
good
on
for you, Tom.
It's going to be going on like gangbusters. You just wait.
Well, Paul, I appreciate your time today. It's great talking a little bit about your background, the man behind the voice, and I really hope we'll be able to have you on again sometime.
Thank you very much, Tom. It's been flattering to talk with you today, and to both of you, the best of luck, and I would love to hear from you again.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Flashback Twin Cities here on KLBB Club 1220. Tom Osmond, back with you with Tom Hsu.
Howdy do.
We got a big show today. We have two guests, and we have our first guest lined up here.
We do.
Our first guest, welcome, Jerry. Now, I want to make sure the name pronounced correctly. Rachel?
Rochelle.
Rochelle.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to tell a story here. In 1990, I had seen the Brady Bunch many times, the original Brady Bunch that was on ABC. And in 1990, Nickelodeon, Nick at Night, they aired what I had never seen before. It was called the Brady Bunch Variety Hour.
Right.
And This aired for a few weeks in 1976, 1977. Nothing like I'd ever seen before. And the one part that I remember, and what I find that many people on the internet or people that are TV geeks like myself, that it was not Eve Plum in the show, but it was yourself.
Yes.
And I want to play a little clip of this. And Tom, you have the clip lined up. Let's just hear a little bit about that first moment of the Brady Bunch Variety Hour.
You've got the cutest little baby face. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, from one of the first shows we did.
The first show.
Yeah. It was great. It was wonderful. It was unique. It was different. But at that time, there were a whole bunch of, variety shows going on. And, the Bradys just wanted to, be a part of that. And we all, really enjoyed doing it. We had some crazy scenes and a lot of disco songs, so it was good. We all enjoyed it a lot.
Well, and you have to ask you now, you replaced Eve Plum, who decided she had other things to do, and you were selected from 1,500 girls, including Kathy Hilton, who auditioned for the role, and they selected you.
Wow.
Yeah, can you believe that one? It came down to three finalists, and I was chosen, so I was extremely happy.
And you thought, I'm now part of the Brady Bunch. Had you been a Brady Bunch fan when you auditioned?
Actually, I'd never really watched the Brady Bunch, because when it was being aired, I was also working on television. And on my free time, I, would go ride my bike or do something else. So I never really watched it. I've heard of it, maybe caught a little bit of it, but no, I was never a Brady Bunch watcher.
So how did you get word of this audition? Were you just doing a lot of other auditions, and this one was just one of the many you did?
My agent called and said that, they're looking for a girl that looks like Jan Brady. And so my mom, picked me up from high school. I was a junior in high school when I did it. And so she took me up to, do the interview, and they seemed to really like me. I had the long blonde hair and a variety show. My strong points were singing, and also dancing, acting as well. But so I fit, the criteria for becoming a Jan Brady.
Well, I think the criteria for becoming a Jan Brady, actually, you they were far and above better dancers and singers in the group here. I think you were probably better trained as a dancer and singer because you weren't a Brady kid. You were actually a working dancer and singer.
Yes, exactly. Because I'd had my own band for 2.5 years, country rock, and I had also I toured with Sammy Davis Jr. With his nightclub act. So I had a lot of singing under my belt already, and toured with Renee Simard all over the USA and Canada. So that really helped. Helped me along the way of getting the part of Jan.
And your website is the official site of Jerry Rischel, Fake Jan.
Yeah.
So you've embraced this Fake Jan tagline. This is not just something that you are burying in the past. This is something you embrace.
Right. Oh, I love being Fake Jan. My fans seem to really like it. It's just a good thing. People need a good laugh in life, and and I want to be part of it. And I don't ever want any of my fans to ever think that I might be trying to pass myself off as the real Jan, because I'm not, So what better way than to be called Fake Jan? I love it. I have stickers and buttons, and people wear it, and I have my own Fake Jan holiday every January 2nd. So, it's a good time.
That's right. I look at the website, January 2nd is Fake Jan Day. And I think the couple things that brought this to life, and tell me if I'm incorrect. One was this show airing on Nick at Night after being in the vault for about 15 years. And the second one was The Simpsons did a parody of this in 1997. And to the audience who does not know The Simpsons are, The Simpsons, they don't know what they are, but what they did was a parody of variety shows, and they took a lot of the elements from Dying Marie.
Smile Time Variety Hour.
That's right, the Smile Time Variety Hour.
That's wonderful.
And Lisa, who is 8 years old and has very jagged hair in The Simpsons, well, she was replaced by a tall, blonde, peppy cheerleader type, and we'll call her Fake Lisa.
Yes, exactly. Fake Jan, Fake Lisa. And I was told that they watched an episode of that with me for like a whole week, and trying to get it all down correctly so that when they did, when they they did that episode, you know, they would, you know, get it as close as possible to our show. And it was pretty cool because even my son told me, he goes, "Wow, Mom, you're even on the poster in the upper right." I said, "You're kidding me." And he says, "No." I said, "Oh, that's pretty cool." So my fans like that as well, you know, and attached to me.
Did you find your fans came out of the woodwork after the internet and after people were able to communicate outside of just writing you fan mail?
I had a lot of positive fan mail when I was doing the Brady Bunch Variety Hour. I was very lucky. I don't know if I should say lucky, but fans embraced me very well, and they were nice to me, and you know, so I didn't get any like bad fan mail, but my fan base really started happening around, let's say, I don't know, 2000, 2001,
right?
And it just kicked in with a vengeance, and now I've just got them all over the world, all around, and you know, they're the greatest, the nicest, and I love you know, conversing with them on Facebook or, you know, wherever, and they come to see me at the conventions I do, and, you know, that makes me feel really happy that they appreciated my work, and I appreciate them, so it's a wonderful thing, yeah.
Looking at your website, I see a picture here with you and the real Peter Brady at a Monkees convention. Is that correct? Is that Peter Brady?
Oh, yes. We just did that in March 1st, 2nd, 3rd here in New Jersey. There was a Monkees convention, and all of us Bradys were there except Marie McCormick, and it was really good seeing each other and, you know, hanging out. And even Robbie Rist was there.
Wow.
And
that's,
yeah,
that's so. Cousin Oliver, to those that don't know who that is, and also Ted Baxter's son from the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah, that's true.
He appeared on a few shows toward the end of their run, I think, and you know, they history is history. Let's take a break. I want to take a break here, and if you don't mind, Jerry, I want to bring you back here and talk a little bit about the fans and talk about what you're doing now.
Okay, sure.
We'll be right back on Flashback Twin Cities here on KLBB Club 1220.
Live from Radio City Music Room in downtown Springfield, it's the Simpson Family Smile Time Variety Hour, featuring the Wayland Smithers Dancers and the Springfield Baggy Pants Players. And now, a family that doesn't know the meaning of the word canceled, the Simpsons.
Come along and bring the family. Come along and join the fun. Come along and join the family. Join the family, Simpson. Roll call.
Remember me, my name is Mark. TV Mom's hair is large.
Step back, Mom. It's Bart's turn now. Eat my shorts, don't have a cow.
I'm Lisa Pippi, blonde and stunning. Sophomore prom queen, 5 years running. Go, Lisa!
Well, at least they parodied you really as the best character on the show.
Yeah, it was not too bad.
And to our audience, this is a clip from The Simpsons, and don't worry, I know that many people who listen to the show probably thinks The Simpsons are the ruin of society, but it's a great show, and that was one of the best episodes ever because they hit on the parody of the Brady Bunch Variety Hour so dead on.
Yeah, they did.
I think even the skit where everyone was wearing a beaver costume, I think they got that down pretty well.
Oh, yeah. We wear some pretty crazy costumes, from rabbits to me being a chicken to scarecrows. Oh, yeah. We covered it all.
And this was the norm. I mean, I think people forget that in the 1970s and in the 80s a bit, this is what people watched on weekends. This is what was on.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Do you remember there were some really great music guests that you worked with in the Brady Bunch Variety Hour? Do you remember some of those?
Oh, yeah. We had Melanie and we had Tina Turner. And we had the Hudson Brothers. We had the Ohio Players. We had Lynn Anderson. Let's see, who else? We had Paul Williams.
Paul Williams. This is not just a makeshift Brady Bunch, even though the Brady Bunch was hosting it. Did the Brady kids snub you? You were fake Jan. Did they treat you nicely? I know you're friends with a few of them now, but...
Yeah, no, actually, they were all very, very, very nice. From day one, they were great. They treated me as if I'd been with them all the time. You know, it made me feel a lot more comfortable. So we got along great. Nobody fought with each other. Everybody got along. We worked well together. So it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect.
So after the Brady Bunch Variety Hour, you went back to high school and decided to live a normal life?
No, after that, I did commercials and stuff, and I did a series of television commercials for Crispy Wheats and Raisins.
Sure.
I was Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz in those commercials, and we'd have different characters from the movie in each commercial, so those were a lot of fun to do. I was supposed to be like 13 years old in them, but I was like 19, 20, 21, 22, 23.
So fake Dorothy. Okay, I like it.
Yeah, I actually looked like Alice in Wonderland.
Did you have the blonde hair? Did you go brunette for those commercials?
Oh, no, I totally looked like Alice in Wonderland. I had the long blonde hair, just like I did on the Brady Bunch, just my normal-looking self. But they really wanted my look, I guess, you know, so they went with it.
I'm really curious.
Sure, why not?
Really curious. You know, you said you have legions of fans. I mean, and people were really embracing of you. Did the producers or anybody say to you, pull you aside, say, you might hear a lot of mean things? Because people don't like change.
Like, no, actually, nobody talked to me about that.
Really?
But for me, I didn't go in it thinking, I never even went in it thinking that, oh, they may not like me. I just thought of it as being, oh, this is going to be the greatest thing I could ever do, sing and dance and be with part of a, you know, an iconic family as the Brady Bunch. So I never think negative. I'm a super positive person.
I like
so I never think negative, so I would have never thought that to begin with. And fortunately, you know, the fans, they were thinking, wow, she grew up and she changed a little bit, you know, but okay. And then they realized, you know, that, oh, wow, this is a whole new person playing the part of Jan Brady. But they didn't seem to mind, and, you know, I just did my work, and I didn't worry about it, actually.
You fared much better than
Dick
Sargent.
Gone, you know.
What was that, Tom?
I said you fared much better than Dick Sargent. I don't think he had quite the fan base when he replaced Dick York.
Ooh.
Oh, maybe. I'm not sure. I liked both of them. But, yeah, you know, you never know how it's going to go on a show when you replace somebody. But I think I was accepted pretty much, you know, okay.
Now, have you and Eve Plum been in the same room together? That's the picture I can't find on the internet here.
Well, no, that's going to be the million-dollar photo if it ever gets taken, because so many of my fans say, oh, my gosh, you've got to get your picture taken with Eve Plum. You guys have got to meet each other. You know, it's like people are going to be scrambling to take the first picture to get it to TMZ or whatever.
So after 30 years, you still have not been in the same room together.
We have never met. We have never spoken, never written to each other. Nothing.
Have you heard rumors?
So
that
this is why it's such a hot item that people want the two Jans to meet really bad.
I feel a challenge here. I think we need to work on this. I think this could be a challenge. This could be ratings bonanza here.
Yeah. Oh, it probably would be.
Do you know
something? I don't know if it would shoot you up or shoot you down. I don't know.
That could happen too.
Do you know if she does? Does she resent you?
Does she like you?
I really don't know. I never really heard much about what she said about me playing her part. But one thing I did hear was like maybe she was a little upset the first episode she saw and that it wasn't her, you know.
Was it her choice not to do the show or was it the producers?
That I really don't know. I don't think it was the producers. But I'm not sure exactly why. I never heard. And I'm not going to speculate because if I don't know the real answer, I'm not going to just say, well, I think. I'm not really sure why she didn't do the show.
Interesting. She did do the subsequent Brady, and I have to admit I did not watch these. I watched a lot of mindless TV. I did not watch the Brady Brides or the Brady Christmas special. But she did every episode since then.
Yeah. I think when she tried to branch out, maybe things weren't going quite as maybe she wanted. So she decided to come back, you know, and do that for a little while.
So what are you doing now? What does Fake Jan do in a typical day?
Well, Well, Fake Jan is now recording another CD. I have one out right now, and I'm recording another CD, and it's going great. Oh, I love it. It's so wonderful. And it's going to be almost like all original songs, and the music's good for it. I've been laying down the tracks, and I have a wonderful executive producer for it, Michael Pomerico, and Peter Malis is doing the music for it. And then Robbie Rist is actually working on this project as well. He's doing background vocals for me and giving me guitar tracks and stuff like that to add to the music, as well as my my longtime friend Don Frankel. So I have a really good team working for me, and then I have my my personal assistant is also my photographer, so she'll be doing my my cover for my my CD when I decide what I want on the cover and what I want to call this one. So it's a great team effort, and it's going to be really good. So I'm super excited about that. So that's what I'm working on right now, and I'm also doing a bunch of conventions. I'm going to be doing one September 6th, 7th, and 8th at the Sands Casino Resort Hotel in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. It's called ParaFest, and it's a paranormal and horror. And then and September 14th and 15th, I'll be in Albany, New York at the Albany Marriott doing Fantacon. That's also a bunch of, more or less horror movies and stuff like that. And then November 23rd and 24th, I'll be at the Boston Super Megafest at the Sheraton Framingham, Massachusetts. And that'll be just, all over, just not just the horror and stuff, because I've done 3 horror movies, so,
therefore, on top of all my other
records. I started working when I was 6, I have a lot of credits under my belt, and the 3 movies I've done happen to be horror movies, so.
Which movies are those? Because I love horror movies myself.
Okay, well, one I did was The Brotherhood of Satan, and that starred L.K. Jones and Strother Martin, and I co-starred in it.
Sure.
And it's a cult classic, and you'll find it in all horror books under cult classics.
Yeah, she was
and
KT, also, the Brotherhood of
another
Satan.
Another big one. Ooh.
KT was your role, the Brotherhood of Satan.
Yeah, and it's on Blu-ray now. It just came out on Blu-ray now.
Nice.
And I was KT, and then I did I Dismember Mama. It's another favorite. It's amazing. In fact, at Fantacon, they're going to be showing it at Fantacon, and I'm going to be narrating it and doing a question and answer with it during that convention. Let's see. And I did one called The Meat Puppet. So I have 3 horror movies.
I don't think anyone could say you don't have range at this point.
No, I think this is... I want everyone to know this is not just Fake Jan. This is KT Annie. This is you played Blair Warner in Garrett's Girls, but this was a
yes. I actually had the part for that the Garrett's Girls, which was Facts of Life. But I had signed the contract to do those Crispy Wheats and Raisins cereal commercials, and I'd already started rehearsing for the Facts of Life for Blair. And the Different Strokes were also filming, the cast from that was also filming on that lot, so they would come over and visit us. But I couldn't stay doing that part because it conflicted with what my commercial was doing. In today's time, that wouldn't happen. But then, it happened. So, and I also probably... 99.9% could have had the part of Reagan in The Exorcist.
Oh,
you get Tom's excited
really,
here.
Really
Tom's a horror
fan. My mother wouldn't allow me to do it. So,
well, that would have been a heck of a thing, though, for a kid. I still don't understand how you would necessarily let your kid be that kind of a role. But,
right. My mom said no, especially when she found out I would have to be hypnotized during one of the interviews and sign a paper, a waiver saying that... That she would allow me to do that.
You would be hypnotized.
Because, some of the scenes that she did, I was told, we may have to, swallow some raw eggs or something. And so I went in on the interview, and they tried to hypnotize me. They put a dollar bill on the ground, and they said, now you're going to bend over and try to pick that dollar bill up, and it's going to weigh 100 million pounds, and you're not going to be able to pick it up. I bent down. I picked it right up. You know, but, you know, I didn't go under, you know, so.
It doesn't work for everyone,
I remember that
I
vividly.
I'm not over
right
the facts of life thing here.
On carpet.
I'm still struggling with this facts of life thing. I mean, we could have had you versus Lisa Wachelle. I'm not over this yet.
Yes, I could have played. I was actually picked to play her part. See, the other girls, what they liked about me, I looked very young for my age.
Mm-hmm.
And the other girls, like Kim Fields and the others, she was like 13 when, you know, she was Tootie, I think it was, when
right.
She started doing that. I was 19 when I was picked, so they could work me longer hours. Once you're 18 and up, they can work you as long as they want to. So I was no longer a minor. I would no longer have had to have school on the set or anything like that. But it just didn't work out, and I always say everything, you know, happens for a reason. So I'm not mad. I'm not upset or anything, you know.
Well, I am.
It is what it is.
But that's,
you're upset about
I'm
it.
I'm upset, but that's... I'll live with it. But no, this is a...
I know.
This is a great resume, and I want everyone to go to jerryrachel.com, the official site of Fake Jan. Remember January.
You can call it fakejan.com. My last name is hard to spell and pronounce, so if you just go to fakejan.com, it'll take you right to my website.
Oh, even easier. I was pulling
yes.
up Jerry Ruschel.
Yeah.
And your latest album is called 1200 Riverside.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And a great picture of you
and
up
on
here.
There, I wanted to, my fans had asked me for a very long time to do, you know, a CD. So then when I got with my executive, music producer Michael, you know, we went through hundreds of songs trying to figure out which ones would be good, which ones I'd done on the Brady Bunch Variety Hour, and we decided that you know, we would mess with one for a few days. No, that's not it. So the songs that I chose, and you know, he helped me pick, were the ones that we thought would be the best for the very first CD that I did. And I especially wanted to do your song because that was my signature song that I sang as a solo on the Brady Bunch Variety Hour. So then everybody started calling your song my song, meaning for me. My fans would call me and say, Elton John's going to be doing your song, but it's really your song, Jerry. I said, okay.
I'm lost, so. But that's good. I got your song, but it's my song.
It's
so there
our
you go.
Song.
I got you confused now, right?
It's not hard to do. That's great, though. I'm looking at some great pictures. If you want to see these great pictures of Jerry with Susan Olsen and with what's Peter's real name again? It's
Chris Knight.
Chris Knight. That's right. I think Peter Brady. Yes. Would call him his real name.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
it's great photos. Jerry, what a great career! I mean, it's not just Fake Jan. It's encompassing three horror movies.
Right.
The facts of life.
I also did a whole bunch of guest appearances on different television series. Also, when I was growing up, and over 40 commercials, 10 of which I was actually a Mattel toy girl. For a while, I did 10 Mattel toy commercials until they said I was getting a little too old. So my last commercial for them was Rock Flowers, and I was 12, and that's somewhere on YouTube. And I'm kind of rocking out in this hot pink dress.
I didn't even
know it was on there. I never know about any of my stuff, but my fans will write to me and say, "You're going to be on TV tonight, or you're something on YouTube," and I just tell them, "Well, thank you for letting me know."
Now, when's the last time you watched the Brady Bunch Variety Hour?
Well, let's see.
Have you ever watched
it? It's been a while. I don't know, maybe a year. I don't know.
Oh, you have watched it, though.
Occasionally, I will pop it in, but not on a regular basis, no.
It's like a yearbook.
Yeah.
No, that's great. Jerry, we'll have to have you again. We're going to have Eve Plum on one side. We're going to have Jerry on the other side. We're going to do this.
Ooh, spicy.
This is a challenge. I'm on it.
Excellent. Let's go for it.
Jerry, thanks so much. Again, it's fakejan.com. And check out her new CD, her pictures. Jerry, we'll have you on again.
Oh, thank you. I've had a great time. Thank you for having me.
This is Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220. Tom Osmond. We'll be back next week. So long.